Thank you for joining this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the 29th of June. It's been quite some time since I've been back, so I'm excited to be here today and with my guests this afternoon, Andrew Morris and Joe Collins from Briceland Vineyards in Humboldt County. But before we get to them on the phone calling in, we're going to thank our sponsor, the Barter House, a proud supporter of the Heritage Radio Network. And the Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. To learn more about the Barter House, please visit them on the web at www.thebarterhouse.com or call them at 917-463-3076. And we'll start today with the Week in Wine recap. In latest news, the Daily News reported on Sunday that legislature in New York late Saturday night introduced a bill to raise revenues for the cash-strapped state of New York that rejects Governor Pattison's call to allow grocery stores to sell wine. There was only limited support for allowing grocery stores to sell wine, which is strongly opposed by the state's liquor store owners. The rest of the revenue bill mirrors one announced Friday by Pattison, including the temporary lifting of the exemption of 4% sales tax on clothing and shoe purchases under $110. Pattison is pushing an emergency budget bill that contains far more cuts as well as the authorization to sell wine in grocery stores. Silver said there is still time to negotiate compromise packages with the governor before then, though there were no talks overnight. And in the crop report, we've heard a lot about the glut of grapes in California and struggling times for boutique California winemakers, but Oregon is also suffering. Recession choked sales, reduced distribution opportunities, and a looming oversupply of both grapes and finished wine have Oregon's 400 commercial wineries frantically looking for solutions. The state has earned a reputation turning out premium Pinot Noir for $25 plus per bottle, and Oregon winemaker Lindsay has figured out how to produce and sell a $7 bottle of Oregon Pinot Noir, a price point several dollars lower anything currently sold. Winemakers realize they need to get creative fast or risk not being around for this year's full harvest. Bill Hatcher, a principal at A to Z Wineworks, has said that the amount of fruit that's going to be unpicked this year is staggering. Those who've gone into the industry for the artistry and romance are quickly facing some real challenges. And in the market feed, Pabst Blue Ribbon, or PBR, has been sold to Metropolis, a Connecticut tycoon known for reinvigorating food brands. Sales of PBR in food, drug, and other retail outlets rose 33% to about $172.7 million in the 52 weeks ending April 18th, the Wall Street Journal has reported. A low-cost, accessible beer, PBR was rediscovered by thrifty East Coast drinkers who were attracted by its price and Midwest roots. Metropolis, once the owner of brands such as Duncan Hines Baking Mixes and Swanson Frozen Dinners, is head of C. Dean Metropolis & Co. in Greenwich, Connecticut. There was no indication of what the sale went for. We are going to take a short break and be back, as I mentioned, with my guests this afternoon calling in from Humboldt County, Joe Collins and Andrew Morris of Briceland Vineyard.
Yeah. Slow down, baby. Slow down, baby. Slow down, baby. Yeah. Slow down, baby. Yeah.
LL Cool J. Slow down, baby. Same PMD. Slow down, baby. Snap the next cash and large check. Over non-believers can coach.
Slow down, baby.
Cause this is Daddy Mac, king of the Bozak. All my friends know that. Mix the mask down.
As I kick it like this. Slow down, baby.
You get rugged, tough, hard like P. Try to play my man, but you couldn't touch me. You f***ing no comp rapper on a quest. To get your head flown, boy, you must be looking set. Cause many often wonder is MD paid. You goddamn right, punk, stay out of my way. Cause I clock G's while you clock Z's. And I don't smoke crack, I smoke MC's. So pick up a pen, cop a squat, and take notes. My rapper suffer from bleeding sprains and slit throats. Cause my style.
You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network on www.heritageradionetwork.com. And this is At the Root of It, broadcasting live today at 4 p.m. from Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn. And I hear the line kind of jingling, so I think I have you on the phone. Are you there, Andrew and Joe?
Hi, Aaron. This is Andrew.
Hi.
This is Joe. We're here.
Excellent. Hello, hello.
How's the weather back there?
Sweltering. Sweltering,
huh?
So hot I can't even speak right. But we have the World Cup playing in the backyard here, so it's high spirits nonetheless.
Uh-huh, great.
Yeah, and you?
Oh, it's beautiful here. It's about 80 degrees today. We've had a really cool spring. It's making the grapes flower a little late this year, but since we've had good weather now, they've flowered all at once, and that's a good thing, so they didn't stretch out over a couple of weeks.
Okay.
So it makes for, it portends a late harvest, though.
Right, yeah. Do you do any late harvest wines as well?
Oh, I mean late harvest in terms of they'd be ripe later. Yeah, late harvest wine, yeah, we do those a few times. I've done a few late harvest Rieslings up
here. Have you?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to back up and give an introduction to who you are and an introduction to Bryceland Vineyards for our listeners.
Well, the winery started commercially in 1985. But prior to that, there was a co-op of several families making wine together. And after a few years in a row of doing really well in the local county fair, in fact, winning gold, silver, and bronze in a couple categories at once, Joe had emerged as the main winemaker for the group. And that's when we switched over and got ourselves bonded to have a commercial winery after we'd proven to ourselves that the wine was coming out pretty good every year.
Nice. So it's still pretty young.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Since 85, yeah, we're like, this will be our 25th year.
Well, congratulations to that, the silver anniversary.
Yeah.
Well, I found out about your wine via, I think I mentioned this to you, Rick over at Grossinger's, because I get his newsletter, and your wine was featured, and the Humboldt County designation excited me, because I haven't had too many from there. So I just wanted also to kind of engage you a bit about the microclimate of Humboldt County and how the sparkling wine production that you do is very unique in California.
Yeah, up here in Humboldt County, it's pretty cool. The cooler county is probably the most northern grape-growing region in California, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they grow grapes up in Oregon and Washington, but we're in California, the way the valleys are situated, we're pretty much the most northern. We started making wines years ago from Boonville, which is in northern Mendocino, and we got the bug for growing grapes up here. And so in the mid to late 70s, we started growing grapes. I'd always been in love with French Champagne, so we started making champagne out of Mendocino County grapes. And it was a natural thing for when I started growing Pinot Noir up here that we should try a little sparkling wine.
Sure. So that was the first thing that you did on your land.
What was that?
That was the those are the first grapes that you planted on your land.
Yeah, you know, there was a guy up here who planted about a couple of acres of Pinot Noir in the 70s, about the same time I planted a little vineyard with about six varieties, and he had planted Pinot Noir, and since I've been making sparkling wine out of, you make sparkling wine predominantly out of Pinot Noir, Blanc, and Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the two grapes that they use in Europe. And so I've been making it from the grapes in the Boonville area for a couple of years, and finally in the early 80s, I was able to get some local grapes because they had only been planted in the late 70s from up here, just a friend of mine, Dennis. And I made my first sparkling wine from Humboldt, and I was impressed.
Yeah.
I thought they were pretty good. It was sparkling wine, you know, you make out of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay that isn't quite as ripe as you'd want it to make a still wine.
Mm-hmm.
So this vineyard up here that Dennis had, it would seem like it was never getting ripe all the way. So it was a natural for us to try to make sparkling wine out of it.
And you had done quite a bit of research as well to determine that the particular area that you were going to be growing these grapes was suitable for these making sparkling wines. So
yeah, I had read a couple of books. I just kind of always had liked to ferment things. I think I'd been fermenting stuff since I was about 18 years old, and I was just always had a bug for it. And everybody in Humboldt County in those days, all the people who had moved up here from San Francisco in the late 60s and early 70s, started making homebrew, and so it was a natural jump to go from making homebrew out of imported ingredients to making a local grape wine.
Sure.
And that's how we got into it.
In those early days, we had been recording the high and low temperatures for a number of years, and the local ranchers all were convinced that you couldn't grow grapes here.
Oh,
they said that it was too cool. But the climate data that Joe had started collecting seemed to show that the climate here was very similar, at least in terms of degree days, to Champagne.
Interesting.
So that, in fact, more similar to Champagne than other parts of the state, because other parts of the state are a little bit warmer.
Right.
Which, you know, makes it a little bit harder to keep the acidity in the fruit, which is what makes distinctive, you know, what we think makes distinctive sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm. And you were telling me before I had you on the line earlier today, just the degrees of difference, which I think was interesting, between Humboldt temperatures at night as opposed to somewhere in Carneros or in Napa, which is a bit warmer. So you can, if you can expand on that a bit for our listeners to see how those climactic influences really do bring out the quality in the bottle.
Yeah, you know, in the Carneros region, for example, and which is part of Napa Appalachian, and it's contiguous to the Napa Valley, they have quite a long season, you see, because of the influence of the Bay Area, of San Francisco Bay there. I mean, their grapes bud out pretty early. I'm sure they're out by the 1st of April and probably before that. And also because of the proximity to the bay, they have a big mass of water that's probably in the mid-50s or something in the winter, even maybe even warmer.
Mm-hmm.
That they get a slight, even though they're cool nights, they probably would be in the high 50s and to the 60s. And here in Humboldt County, we're kind of in the hilly area, although we're really close to the coast, within about 10 miles. We get really hotter days, I think, and also cooler nights. And I think that's because we're not right, you know, proximate to the ocean.
Sure.
And, but like I said, the one vineyard that was up here, it seemed like it didn't ever want to get ripe, which is a natural for Champagne, because when they invented Champagne probably 1,000 years ago or 800 years ago, it was because they had to make a beverage out of the grapes that grew in the Champagne region of France, because the king of the Holy Roman Empire lived there.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to come up with a wine, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was how they got around to making sparkling wine, and how it became the noble wine.
Sure, yeah. Now, in terms of your blends, I mean, we know that Pinot Noir can be fickle and a difficult grape to grow. Do you use generally a certain percentage as your house style at Briceland?
Yeah, you know, when I first read a couple of books from UC Davis about grape growing, I remember one of the things they always said was that, indeed, that they hadn't really discovered in California the right climate for growing Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in the 60s, when that was written. And indeed, since then, they've now developed a lot of areas. They've now discovered a lot of areas where you can grow Pinot Noir, including Russian River Valley, Sonoma Coast, Humboldt County, I think Santa Barbara, Santa Ynez Valley. There's a lot of places now, but they all are basically suited for Pinot Noir because they are closer to the coast than places like Napa and other growing regions, Sonoma. And the reason I use that percentage of, I use 70% Pinot Noir and about 30% Chardonnay. And I use that just because when I started that seemed to be the percentage that they used generally in Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of reinventing the wheel, we decided we'd start right there.
Gotcha. Okay. And it's remained pretty consistent.
Yeah, the Pinot Noir is, I think, you know, is what you're drinking, 70% Pinot Noir Blanc, and it's quite, it has a distinctive aroma and body and everything. And I think that the Chardonnay, it's kind of like perfume.
Mm-hmm.
It adds a little bit of a slightly different quality to it.
Sure. Well, I when I was doing my studies, we always kind of went back to the roundness, the elegance, the finesse that Chardonnay contributes to a champagne blend.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, Pinot Noir, like you mentioned, that aroma, that fruit, that structure, then coming into play to make it a beautiful blend. Do you find those similarities, as you mentioned earlier, in Humboldt with respect to those two grapes?
Oh, yeah. I think the word you got right there was structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by using 70% Pinot Noir, you have a wine that's based on that, and you've got this structure. And then on top of that, you add these, you know, the little finishing touches like Chardonnay. A few people use Pinot Meunier, which is another grape that's mm-hmm. from Europe. But I don't think it's been used a lot here. And so we're pretty happy with it. Well, we've tried 100% Pinot Noir sparkling wines, and I've got one out right now that's actually really old that people are really liking it. I was surprised. I thought it was a little too old.
Well, what year was it?
15 years in the bottle.
Oh, that's great. That's a great
years.
Experiment.
I found this 500-bottle box of it there that I shouldn't have lost, but I did, and I recently disgorged some for a bunch of people, and they loved it. So
we got a 1995 Breisland.
Yeah. People really like older sparkling wines, you know.
Absolutely.
I let some of them get older, and I was surprised that they really responded to it.
Well, that's a true testament to the acidity that you have in that climate as well.
And particularly with that 14 years, the first 14 years of that being on the lees. So
yeah. Ooh, that must have been a treat.
there is some of that still left. I wanted to mention, too, that we don't only have sparkling wine here. We also have certain vineyards where the Pinot Noirs actually do ripen, and those come out really well. And also Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. And the Sauvignon Blanc is quite unique. Most people grow that in warmer areas.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a very distinctive product that is from the local grapes on the Sauvignon Blanc as well.
So some of the Sauvignons coming from Napa that have more of those peach and melon flavors, and you would say that your Sauvignon Blanc might be a little bit more akin to something from the Loire or from Bordeaux with more citrus and higher acidity?
Yeah, I think citrus is right there. I mean, that's what I would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
I know we took a class. I took a class they had there. He had a great symposium in Lake County a couple of years ago, devoted exclusively to producing Sauvignon Blanc. And what they were saying was that there was a lot of aromatic compounds in the grapes that oftentimes during a standard fermentation disappear, so that if you could protect the wines from oxidation and keep the temperatures down, you might be able to preserve these aromatic compounds.
Mm.
So we tried that. I mean, we had been doing everything from barrel fermenting, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do if you want to protect aromatic compounds.
Right.
So, about 5 years ago, I started making what they call a reductive method. It's just, you know, trying to blanket the wine, protect it from air the whole time you make it. And I think it really helped the quality of our Sauvignon Blanc immensely.
Interesting.
It was something. Yeah, it's very interesting. So, also, I was saying that the Pinot Noirs didn't get ripe. Well, what we found out then, too, is that if you put your grapes on a better trellis, and that's what happened with that vineyard that never got ripe, we re-trellised it, and we were getting it up to total ripeness every year when we wanted to. So it was just a case of learning how to grow
grapes. Sure, yeah. Well, I'm going to keep you on the line. We have to take a short break, and there's another varietal that Andrew had mentioned you are producing as well that recently received some acclaim, Arnaise, native of the Piemonte region. So I'd love to talk about that too, so please stay on the line.
We're back
Okay.
Time off. All the rappers got jerked due to the fact they whacking their track. Have to go back and stack because they lack the ingredients. EPMD and scratch for that. Yo, I'm the hip hopper, plus the show shopper. Down with MD, yes, the microphone doctor. One Rex, the other the swords. And if you think you're ready to mess, kill the noise. We don't play when it's time to slay. I get a cut from my homie, yo. Then I lay back and mack and all the rhymes I pack. And wait for a sucker to jump and then attack. Well, I'm known to be the master in the MC field. No respect in 87, 88.
Welcome back to this afternoon's program of At the Root of It. With my guests today who are calling in from Humboldt County, Andrew Morris and Joe Collins of Bryceland Vineyards. And we just wrapped up the previous segment talking a bit about Bryceland and the varieties that are growing in there. And there was one that I wanted to touch upon too, Arnais, so, which is something you don't see so often in the States.
Yes, Arnais. The reason I started producing Arnais is because I know the agricultural the ag agent, University of California agricultural agent, Mendocino County. He started working there about 15 years ago. His name is Glenn McGordy, and he's very interested, always been interested in Mediterranean and Italian wines. So he, way back about 10 or 15 years, decided to look for a different variety for people to grow or to experiment with out here in California, because there's so many. He said too much we're relying on French varieties, Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir. And he says there's an awful lot of varieties than the rest of the Mediterranean, which is perhaps a closer climate match to California. So what he did, well, the one he brought in was Arnais, and he just put in a couple of acres at his own place to see how it would grow. And there's actually even now I think there's only about 50 acres in the entire West Coast, scattered up and down from Oregon south. And what's good about this grape is that it's it produces a wine with good acidity even in a fairly warm Mediterranean climate. So he had a few tons of this stuff, and I started making it, and a few other people make it. I know Greg Graziano, he's a winery in Mendocino. He makes that, and I think Seghezio Winery. They make it too. Yeah.
Didn't you recently receive an award for that at another one of the fairs out there?
We were experimenting with making it different ways, and part of it came out really good. Actually, the majority of it, and we sent it to the Orange County Fair, and we got a gold medal.
Nice.
So I have no complaints.
Excellent. What was it up against?
Well, I don't know. They put it in a category with all these other varieties.
Okay.
I think that's what it is, that they put it in with a whole bunch of odd varieties, probably, Pinot Grigio. I really don't know. I didn't look at the entry form yet exactly, but it was, you know, other varieties.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of Italian varieties and Portuguese varieties, and there's probably quite a few of them. But it's actually a very good wine. People like it. It's kind of a hard sell because people don't recognize the name.
Right.
Although here in Humboldt, it's been really popular, and it's going out the door. And I'm about to release that new one that just got a gold medal, and I'm real happy. When you have a gold medal wine out there, it's easy to talk about it.
Pretty cool. I mean, I this actually leads me into my next question, because you're describing these wines and I'd love to get my hands on them, but at the same time, I know that you have very small production, and being all the way here on the East Coast, I imagine most of your wines are locally bought. And one of the pressing issues that I've been kind of covering in the news here is the governing rule, the potential governing rule that wouldn't allow wineries to sell directly to the consumer, which is majorly how you are doing your sales at the moment, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. You see, other than, I mean, we're our own distributor, and we sell probably 95% of our wine right here in Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's say 90% of them, probably the 5% of it we mail order, and 5% of it we sell in the Bay Area, and we're selling a bunch in Oakland right now. And yeah, without mail order, that would really hurt us a lot.
Would it? Yeah.
I'll tell you.
But the thing that's interesting about that, though, is that those rules are a little bit difficult for them to have any practical effect, because you know, there's a rule that says if you buy something from out of state on the internet, you're supposed to pay the sales tax in your home state.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've ever met anybody who does that.
That's a lot of paperwork to try to keep track of, too.
Okay, so you buy a TV and it's shipped from wherever it's shipped from, and are you really going to pay the sales tax? And so the point is that if New York passes a rule that says somebody can't ship wine to you,
mm-hmm.
How are they going to stop it? And if they catch you, what are they going to do? Are they going to send their cops from New York out to California because somebody shipped a case of wine?
Yeah. It's,
I'm speaking hypothetically, of
sure,
course.
Sure, yeah, no, it's a hard situation to gauge, but it's also brought out kind of just the conversation of smaller wineries like you. Do you have an interest in distributing on a national level with different markets, or do you like where you're at the moment?
Well, right now it would be difficult. I mean, we don't have a very big production,
mm-hmm.
and so we'd have to, you know, we'd have to increase our production quite a lot. I think that if we continue to be able to ship across the United States, that it would end up being quite a good. We could service an awful lot of clients that way,
right?
Because the cost of shipping, you know, is not exorbitant. You know, I mean, just the way we ship it by a half a case or a case, I think would, if I was shipping right to a customer, I think it would probably be a buck and a half to about $2 a bottle of shipping. And if it's a wine you want, that's not
sure.
that much money.
That's very true. Very true. No. Yeah.
And so that would be convenient. The idea of shipping wine long distances is something we're trying to come to grips with, though. Here in Humboldt County, people are really into the local movement, and they really,
yeah.
I think that's helping our sales, actually, in the last year or so. People are beginning to think, why am I buying a $10 bottle of wine that's being shipped all the way from New Zealand or from France, where you're burning an incredible amount of fuel to get that bottle full of wine
mm-hmm.
all the way over here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's something that's been brought up to us recently, and of course, for our perspective, it's great.
Yeah. What are some of the other local agricultural products that you think are, you know, unique to Humboldt?
There's a big movement now for grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an excellent seafood production here with oysters in Arcata Bay.
Oh, that's great.
They're actually increasing their production right now because of what's happened on the Gulf Coast.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
In fact, when we have our tastings, we usually go through 500 oysters in a couple of days, and we trade wine for the oyster directly to the farmer.
Oh, that's a little nice barter operation.
Which is a nice thing because the oysters come out really inexpensive that way.
And they go perfectly with your wine. So
exactly.
Yeah.
There was one other thing that I was going to mention about your shipping thing and distribution. And that is that we self-distribute, and so we are taking the distributor markup,
mm-hmm.
and we deliver the wine to the restaurants and stores that carry it if it's a
okay.
retail situation. And so one of the downsides to selling through a distributor would be...
You give up that margin.
Lower cost.
Sure.
You know, lower,
yeah.
lower profit margin to us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, you know, we currently sell all of our wine, and so we would either have to increase production and or negotiate with the distributor to sell at some price between the FOB price and the you know, the wholesale price,
mm-hmm.
to make it worth it for us,
yeah.
To do that, you know, which is not impossible. But usually the negotiation stops when the distributor says, well, why would I buy your wine at 58% of retail when I can buy this other guy's wine at 50% of retail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have a unique situation there then.
Yeah, which, you know, we're not opposed to having some of our wine sold in other places. We're not, you know, emphatically opposed to that, but it's, you know, it's working fairly well now as it is.
Great.
You know, Andrew was mentioning that Humboldt County grass-fed beef, and that's really come of age in the last couple of years. They've been doing grass-fed beef for a while here, but it finally caught on. I think they did a little marketing through the county, and I've heard now that it's being sold in all this chain of stores called Whole Foods, which is,
I've heard of them.
I don't know if it's national or at least West Coast.
Certainly national, yeah.
It is, huh?
Yeah, they continuously keep popping up in Manhattan.
Yeah, really? Well, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a good thing to get going. And like he says, the oysters, and then there's a huge flower farm up here in Humboldt County.
Wow, it sounds beautiful. Can't wait to visit.
Yeah, and a pretty good dairy industry and stuff. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, when I started thinking about Champagne, and I actually just returned back from there a couple weeks ago, staying in the Aube, in a small town near Tonnerre, and they had all these, you know, local goat cheeses, which went beautifully with the champagne. So there it is, the Humboldt Fog. So every time I think of that cheese, I will think of your wine.
Yeah, that's a really great product. Those people started just out of love of goats, I think, and not only made cheese, but created different cheeses, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I think that's really a great success story. I have to hand it to those people.
And that's
for doing that.
That's another thing that we like to serve at our tastings.
Is it? Yeah.
So that's nice to be able to have the local products. I mean, local is all fine, but it has to be local and good.
Sure, exactly.
You know, around here, a lot of people, over the years, when we first moved here, you know, 40 years ago, everybody was kind of back to the land, and everybody was raising chickens, and we got into raising pigs and turkeys and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And we still do it, actually. We still have piglets out there now and small chickens, and we've been getting our, because of this local thing, not because of that, we've been doing it for years. We started buying local calves from some of the guys who raise beef around here and having them butchered up, and, you know, we have a little collective. And we buy about 6 calves, and my wife Maggie takes care of it, does all the paperwork, and we have them slaughtered and butchered up and distributed to, you know, a dozen of us. And then the same thing with lambs.
Wow.
We have beautiful local lamb industry around here, but it's really gone downhill because it's tough for them to compete against, like, New Zealand lamb or something.
Which they can get at a lower price point,
but the quality of this stuff is really incredible.
I imagine,
So everybody around here has been, like I said, taking advantage of the fact that we already have so many great local products here.
And one of the things that we pride ourselves in, particularly here, is a form of farming called organic by neglect. And this is the ranchers. Did you give these animals any antibiotics or anything? And they shrug their shoulders and say, well, they weren't sick. So the conditions for the animals are really good. And so it's not that the farmer has the philosophy of doing it organically.
Uh-huh.
They just do it organically because that's the easiest way.
Sure. I've not heard that term before. So that's
organic by neglect.
Is that a Humboldt County term?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay. But yeah, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah. Well, I'd love to point our listeners to your website as well, as we have to wrap up today's program. So, what is that?
It's BricelandVineyards.com.
Okay.
Which is really a temporary website, but all of our contact details are there.
Great.
We can also be found on Facebook.
All right.
Under Breslin Vineyards Winery.
Excellent. Well, you can run today's show via Facebook as well if you'd like, so I'll send you the link to that. And thank you very much for your time this afternoon. I was really looking forward to the conversation, and it was great. So.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to somebody about this, especially somebody in New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a lot for having us on. It was fun.
Great. Well, talk to you soon, and have a great day.
All right.
Cheers. Bye. Thank you for joining us today. As with all our episodes, you can find them online at www.heritageradionetwork.com in the archives. And a thank you to our sponsor once again, The Barter House, a proud supporter of the Heritage Radio Network, and to our producer today, Jack Inslee, and engineer, Nat Wiener. See you next week.
Y fui feliz pensando que eras mía, pero aquel antifaz que por fortuna